You're listening to SBS News.
If you thought COVID-19 had pressed pause on the worsening effects of global warming, you'd be mistaken. There are four key indicators on which scientists use as a yardstick to measure climate change: greenhouse gas concentrations, sea level rise, ocean heat, and ocean acidification, all of which set new benchmarks in 2021, according to a damning new report from the World Meteorological Organization. Professor Pete Stratton is a biological oceanographer at the Institute for Marine and Antarctic Studies. He says that COVID-19 and the resulting economic slowdowns have caused a reduction in emissions, but warns that this doesn't tell the whole story.
I think there is a perception in the community that emissions have slowed down over the last couple of years, and they have, but the CO2 in the atmosphere is still growing and it's still having strong impacts on climate, hence the increases in the other indicators that we've seen. And, you know, it's worth pointing out too that people talk about some of the climate effects being baked in, like, you know, even if we were to stop emitting tomorrow, the consequences for things like melting ice sheets and sea level rise are still going to continue for decades. And you're absolutely seeing that in the sea level rise, because sea level rise for the last, well, since 2013 is increasing twice as fast as it was 15 years ago. So even though COVID has slowed down emissions, all of these climate indicators are still increasing.
Ian Lowe is an Emeritus Professor of Science, Technology and Society at Griffith University. He says this latest report from the WMO makes for grim reading.
Well, it's very worrying. I mean, it reinforces what the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change 6th Assessment Report released earlier this year said, which is that climate change is not just happening, but it's still accelerating. And the main reason it's still accelerating is that we're putting increasing amounts of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. There was a minor pause during the pandemic, but the acceleration has resumed. And each year we are putting more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. And as long as we keep doing that, all of the indicators of temperature, of rainfall change, of worse floods, of worse bushfires, they're all going to keep getting worse.
Indeed, the day-to-day face of climate change, according to scientists, is extreme weather. Globally, extreme weather has cost hundreds of billions of dollars in economic losses and wreaked a heavy toll on human lives, triggering shocks for food and water security and accentuating displacement. And that's all just in the first few months of 2022. Professor Colin Butler, an honorary professor at the National Centre for Epidemiology and Population Health, points to the growing issue of climate refugees.
Already we've got climate refugees in Australia. We've got people living in cars and caravans who are flooded from Lismore. Houses are uninhabitable. But globally, I think it's becoming desperate. There's a report that one in four Africans currently are facing significant food insecurity. One in four. That's a phenomenally high number. And parts of Africa are affecting, you know, have food insecurity that traditionally didn't have it. And also, of course, with the food price, the crops failing, or the animals failing, people are naturally going to look for some alternative, and lots of them are going to end up in horrible refugee camps, I'm afraid.
It's an issue, he says, that governments are quick to avoid.
The concept of climate migrants is denied by quite a few governments, because it then would mean some sort of moral, or perhaps even legal, responsibility to prevent it. But to me, it's sort of playing with words. If somebody's, if you're on a small island state and the sea level's rising and it's up to your door and there's other factors too and you migrate, I mean, whether it's a climate migrant or an environmental refugee or just an asylum seeker, it's still the same thing. You're displaced because it's just become unlivable where you were. And if you look ahead, this is going to get worse and worse.
Australia's own federal government has often been criticised for its seeming reticence to take the threat of climate change seriously, especially with the effects taking place in their own backyard. In 2015, the then Immigration Minister Peter Dutton was overheard quipping and laughing with his colleagues Tony Abbott and Scott Morrison about the plight of Pacific Island nations who were facing rising sea levels.
It was a good meeting.
Yeah, it was about to be, you know, have water.
Professor Lowe says that rather than being just neglectful to action on climate change, the federal government has been accelerating the issue.
Well, the government has not just been missing in action, it's actually been making the problem worse. It's been tipping petrol on the fire by its policies to encourage greater use of fossil fuels. The Labor Party's policies are better, but they're still not good enough. The Greens and several of the independents had much better policies. And I suppose the best we can hope for is that those independents and the Greens might have enough say in the new parliament to force whoever's in government to take stronger action.
Timely words as the country heads to the polls this weekend.
Government decisions decide things like whether we burn coal and gas or whether we accelerate the transition to clean renewable fuels. Government decisions determine whether we encourage electric vehicles or whether we keep burning petrol and diesel. Government's decisions determine whether the agricultural sector has incentives to store carbon rather than being a source of carbon.
Professor Lowe says that many of these decisions are based around the pursuit of short-term economic gains. He argues, though, that long-term, there are great financial costs to not slowing climate change.
There is a real economic cost in the agricultural sector. Fruit and vegetables are more expensive at the moment as a result of the floods. The agricultural sector generally is coping with a changing climate, and that's going to make food security worse. And the tens of thousands of jobs that depend on tourism associated with natural assets like the Great Barrier Reef are being put at risk by short-term decisions to burn and export more coal and gas. So we really need to think when we're voting, are there candidates who are going to work towards a better future, or do we continue to elect candidates who are putting grubby short-term financial considerations ahead of our long-term interest?
The WMO report will be used as an official document for the next UN climate change negotiations, known as COP27, set to take place in Egypt later this year. Tina Quinn, SBS News.